following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the host and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. And that can only mean one thing. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. And it is Memorial Day weekend. I'm having a little trouble adjusting this, but it's Memorial Day weekend. And we are, as we always are, here live. We pride ourselves on that because we have not yet missed well into our second year. We don't intend to. So some people work while others play, and that suits me just fine. Adam's smiling. Suits him fine, too.
It does.
So remember, not all shows are live all the time. Anyway, this one is live today. If you want to control some of the editorial content, pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. That's 222-TALK. It is, as I said, Memorial Day weekend, so the beaches are getting open. It's the unofficial start of summer, and everybody's out playing. But let's not forget what it's about.
Absolutely not. The most important thing.
I did some research this morning and found the number of people who've died in the defense of this country, and whoa, was I surprised. 1,190,085 up to 1991 when the undeclared war on terror started, which will be around for probably the rest of our lives, which has added so far another 6,456. So that's a lot of families, a lot of people that have made this country what it is. So let's remember, it started actually, a little brief note, in Waterloo, New York, many years ago. Let's see, 1971, it became a U.S. federal holiday. But back in Waterloo, they were honoring soldiers who died in the Civil War. So it goes way, way back as a tradition, if not a whole countrywide tradition. So that said, here we are doing a financial show after a week that you could almost put a smile on your face with. Well, actually, you could put a smile on your face.
I think you definitely could.
Last week, we were saying that we were more optimistic than most of the people we talk to and most of the people we read about, that sort of thing. And the reason's pretty simple to me. Where else are you going to go?
Well, that's one reason. The other reason is that this economy isn't as bad as people want you to believe.
No, and it's reflected by the labor market, for one. Mm-hmm. Certainly not by the whopping restatement of the GDP from a 0.5 to 0.8.
Which actually isn't that bad for the first quarter.
No, and it is an adjustment the right direction. I take it with the same grain of salt I take all federal statistics with right now. But the trend line is definitely there. I have some other comments on that for a little bit later, too. But meanwhile, this week, let's tell them what happened.
Well, Friday, we ended the day on an up note, as there was a lot of buying going into the close before a long weekend, which is usually a very good sign that people aren't afraid to stay in the market over a long weekend and are optimistic about next week. So that's always a good thing to see. The market closed up 0.25%, the Dow did anyway, going into the long weekend. And it looked for a while like it might sell off on Friday, especially when Yellen was giving that interview, which I feel like we talk about this every week, but it's just so irritating.
Yes, she is.
I mean, what? It's like every time the woman opens her mouth, it could affect the market 200 points up or 200 points down. It's gotten to a point where the Fed is just so powerful when it comes to controlling the markets that it is ridiculous.
And it wouldn't even be half bad if they'd actually say something.
Right. Well, she wasn't even up there to say anything. She was just giving an interview at Harvard, which she graduated from, and it was a more of a human interest interview than a markets interview. So why are we following it so closely? Stop it already.
Really?
All right.
It's the classic, look over there.
Yeah, that's the end of my rant, but you know how I feel about
it. It's not the end of mine.
The Dow ended the week up 2.1%, the S&P up 2.3%, and the NASDAQ was the clear winner this week, up 3.4%. So the only index that is negative for the year is the NASDAQ, which is only down 1.5%. Everything else is up for the month, the quarter, and the year.
And for all of us contrarians out there who've been saying that the NASDAQ was, let's say, artificially hammered down, I think the proof is in the recent results.
Yeah, absolutely. The economic data this week was actually kind of negative, although it was very much overshadowed by all the housing data. Mm-hmm. The housing data was fantastic, and I'll get to that in a little bit. In total, 10 reports missed their expectations out of 20, and only 6 came in more favorable than their estimates. Next week is a short week due to the Memorial Day holiday, but there are 28 reports coming out in that short time, so it should be a very interesting week in the market.
And jobs will happen next week as part of that, right?
Correct. But you actually...
A lot of economic data, too.
Yeah, the jobs report might appear a little worse than it is because of the Verizon strike. There were 40,000 Verizon landline workers who were off, who were not working because they were on strike. That got resolved this week, but the data is going to show them as unemployed. So could be interesting. The strongest housing report released this week was the new home sales report, and it pretty much blew expectations out of the water. Sales rose 17% versus the previous month while hitting a recent high of 619,000 units versus an expected 523,000 units. Supply was way down, prices were way up, and the really good news is that most of the buyers weren't investors or speculators. They're actual people who want to move into the homes they are buying, and that's a sign of a healthy housing market.
Yeah, and it's also reflective of the labor market getting better because people who aren't worried about their jobs will go ahead and buy a house.
No doubt. And, of course, the news is going to want you to believe that this is another housing bubble in creation because they're trying to get clicks and sell news stories. But don't believe it. This is actually a healthy housing market, and I think that Angela and Howard could attest to that. Mm-hmm. So on Thursday, we learned that pending home sales hit a 10-year high as well, which indicate that next month's existing home sales should come in with a strong number. So all in all, a really good month for housing. Weekly jobless claims once again came in better than expected at 268,000 versus 275 expected, which surprised no one considering that they have now been below 300,000 for almost as long as we have been on the air.
Yeah, there was a little tick up last week, but it's an anomaly. Whenever you have a start moment and an end moment when you're measuring anything, you're going to get a little anomaly from one good day or one bad day.
Yeah, that was actually a couple weeks ago. It came in at 295, but
still under three.
Immediately went back down. Yeah. So
then they all say, well, the four-week average went up, even though the thing went down.
Well, right.
Yeah. Add four things together and divide by four, see what you get.
Exactly. The negative data really came out of the manufacturing sector this week, although the PMI for both manufacturing and services missed expectations. So that was slightly concerning, but not too bad. Capital goods orders also missed. So the whole manufacturing thing is just not looking great right now. But you have to remember, it represents such a small part of our economy these days. And then the GDP, as we mentioned, came in at 0.8. And so all in all, I think it pretty much sums up the economy right now. It isn't as bad as people think, but it also isn't as good as people think it should be.
How about that? And next week, what do you expect?
Next week, I expect, I don't know what to expect in terms of economic data.
I'll make one prediction.
It's going to be all over the place, though.
Yep. The market will not go down on Monday.
Okay.
And that one I'm certain of, folks. That's a good one. All right. Trivia question this week brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. Kenny and I were getting to know each other pretty well this week. We spent a lot of time around the house. What percentage of 401k participants have no stock funds in their accounts? And we'll talk all about that. So give us a call. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Adam Van Wee, Certified Financial Planner.
Had to get that in again this week. Regular listeners remember that Adam got his certification last week. We're all very happy about that. It was a long, tough thing as it is, and now both of us will band together here and say from here on in we want it to be longer and tougher.
Absolutely. Keep now that I'm in.
Yep. Keep that competition down as best we can. Lines are open. 222-8255. It's 222-TALK. Trivia question of the day. What percentage of 401k participants have no stock funds in their accounts? And why is that important to us as financial planners? Because if you're investing long-term for your retirement and you're using cash and bonds, you're missing out on the greatest accumulation device in the history of the world. People have to get over their fear. What do they do to get over your fear? You learn, because we fear the unknown. Part of the way you learn is to listen to this show every week.
Yeah, I don't have the statistics on bonds, but I can tell you that since 2009, at the very bottom of the market after the during the Great Recession, the Dow is up 173%, the NASDAQ is up 288%, and the S&P is up 210%. So you would have missed out on all of that if you were in bond funds.
Folks, you got to understand that if you're going to get anywhere in this world that looks like financial independence, stocks are imperative. Not 100%, unless you're really young, then you can do that. But you've got to have a presence in there. And the number that I'm looking for, plus or minus 1%, is a bigger number than most people would probably come up with. It is really a problem in the way our society is getting older. It involves more and more education. And for those of you who would like to learn more, why don't we tell you who we are? Because we can help.
We, in our day jobs, are certified financial planners located in Jacksonville Beach, right off of Marsh Landing Parkway exit of Butler. And we're also online at vanweefinancial.com. We do a blog. We update it twice a week. And we talk about a lot of things we talk about here on the radio and then some stuff we don't. So check that frequently. If you miss a radio show, podcasts are available on iTunes and SoundCloud.com, as well as on our website. You can book an appointment with us right on our website. And as we always say, that first appointment is an hour and it's free.
I like the price.
You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/VanWeFinancial or Twitter at VanWeFinancial, or you can email us at info@VanWeFinancial.com.
Okay. And everybody, please stay tuned. For the bottom of the hour, I have a public service announcement about some exciting stuff going on right here in the River City that everybody should know. So don't miss it. All right. We've all heard lately that Hillary Clinton has decided that she was going to put Bill in charge of the economy because, well, he knows how to fix it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My question to you is, do we really want another Clinton economy? Really? How many of you remember the eighth year of Bill Clinton? Let's have a little background here. And this is purely a financial, not a political discussion, believe me. He knows how to fix it, huh? In the 1990s, things were pretty good, weren't they? But do you remember what happened in 2000? We call it the tech bubble bursting or the market crash or whatever. Do you think he took credit for that? I don't think so. So just remember a little bit. I've said for years that Clinton's the luckiest man alive for more reasons than I would ever care to discuss. This show being purely financial, I'm going to talk about his lucky financial record. Another thing I like to point out is that that record was 7 years long. He served the only 7-year term in presidential history. No one ever talks about the eighth year except me. And I'm going to keep talking about it. But the day he turned over the keys to Air Force One to George W. Bush, things were not like they had been a little bit ago. There were myriad problems with him, but the economic problems were huge. First, in 1992, when running for election at first, Clinton promised to raise taxes on the rich while at the same time promising a middle-class tax cut. Remember that? He kept one of those promises. But the other one, if you remember the old "I've never worked so hard in my life" speech, I just couldn't find a middle-class tax cut anywhere. So middle class took it, and they took it hard. For one thing, he took the taxable portion of your Social Security up from 50% to 85% and got away with it. He raised taxes on the rich. He didn't help anybody with the tax plan, and yet things boomed. And to this day, they will argue that it was the Clinton economy that did it. Well, I'll tell you one thing for sure. I'm sure glad I didn't have my tax cut pre-spent. Most people understand that raising taxes on the public is not good for the economy. Our economy is 70% consumer-driven, and if you take more money out of the consumer's pockets, it's not going back into the economy. Cutting taxes works. It works every time it's tried, whether it's JFK, Reagan, whoever. So cutting taxes would have made more sense to me than raising taxes. But along came technology. Coming into 1993, nobody really had internet in their home, did they? You might have a dial-up AOL line, some new thing called email. Investors were doing business with their brokers over landlines, and they were paying a lot of money for it. And then some fellow named Charles Schwab came along, invented the discount brokerage. And as the internet grew and his competitors grew, people started to do things financially a little bit different right out of their homes. Low-cost trading became the thing, and everybody was getting in the market. The economy kept growing. Jobs were created, both technology jobs, support businesses, financial jobs, the whole thing. It was actually the beginning of the information economy. And I will suppress any urge to thank Al Gore for inventing the internet. As technology was growing and costs were declining, the wealth effect was invented. So I don't know who coined the actual term, but people had so much money on paper in their investment accounts that things were just booming. I remember the nightly news with Tom Brokaw, the internet passed another hurdle today, 2,000, and it was 3,000 and 4,000. And he was right. At the start of the Clinton presidency, it was 697. It reached 5,048 in those 7 years. Not eight, seven. Clinton had some help. Because of his antics in the first couple years, there was a backlash at the electorate, and along came the first Republican House in 40-odd years, along with Newt and the Contract with America, which was voted on and passed right down the line. Didn't all stay law, but a lot of it did. The budget actually became balanced with a little bit of sleight of hand from those nice people at the Social Security Administration who lent the excess contributions over to the other. I don't want to get into all that. But we did ostensibly balance the budget for 4 years. He took credit for that, too. Never would have happened without Newt. We had welfare reform at the same time. Remember Tommy Thompson coming in from Wisconsin with his workfare and putting it in at the national level? And Clinton said he was going to mend it, not end it. All of a sudden, it started working. So like the great politician that he absolutely was, probably isn't anymore, but was, he took credit for it and went along to other things. Just fine. We took lots and lots of people off the rolls, put them to work. Well, then some other stuff happened. On the 10th of March 2000, the NASDAQ closed at 5,048, an all-time high. And then the bubble burst, and all of those new dot-coms started to go belly up as they were running out of cash and people no longer were willing to put the cash in because the stocks were falling. Capital was fleeing the market. Well, by inauguration day of 2001, yes, Clinton was president all of 2000, the economy belonged to him, the NASDAQ stood at 2770, a decline of over 44% in 10 months. They don't talk about that, and I don't want it back. The Dow lost more than 20%. S&P was down over 3.5%. Worse yet, the economy slowed to a crawl. Remember when Cheney was running and he said that the economy was in recession and they practically laughed him off the TV set? Well, technically, it wasn't. The last three quarters, which were the first three of the new administration, because it takes a year to take effect, two were negative and one was slightly positive. So it went negative, positive, negative. It was in horrendous condition and it only would recover with the tax cuts that were put in. Now, all of that said, I don't want a return to Clintonomics. I don't want my taxes increased. I want our taxes cut back to the way they were in Ronald Reagan or whatever. I'm truly a fair tax person rather than a tax cutter, but I'll take anything I can get. But don't be fooled by all the people in the media who are absolutely convinced that it is the tax the rich theory that caused the prosperity of the 90s. It had nothing to do with it. And that is the rest of my rant. Stay tuned after the break. I will be talking about something very near and dear to my heart that you would all want to hear. Adam's got a bunch of stuff to do, and our phone lines are open, 222-8255. Trivia question stands out there. What percentage of Americans with 401ks have no stock funds in them? And this is egregious, in my opinion, people. Absolutely egregious.
And if you just want to call in and take a guess at that trivia, feel free. Right. You can win a $25 gift card from Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm.
Absolutely right. All right, the music's playing. We got to get out of here. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 222-8255. And yes, we are here live on this Memorial Day weekend. Wayne, buddy, if you hang on for just a second, I promised my public service announcement, and I want to get it done here because it's very important to a lot of us. A lot of people listening right now know where the Jacksonville Humane Society is, out on Beach 8464 or something like that. It's been there for almost 100 years in that location, believe it or not. And before that, it was in existence at a different location. It's this, I think, the second oldest charitable organization in this area. They had a big fire in 2007, destroyed the place. It took them weeks to even round up the animals. Temporary buildings were moved onto the property, and they didn't miss a beat. Since 2014, the Humane Society has been the nation's largest no-kill facility. They have recently completed and have in operation a new full-service animal hospital. We've had the tour. It's beautiful. It's bright and sunny, and it doesn't even smell like animals. It's so nice and clean in there. Now they're undergoing, finally, after years in the planning, the beginning of the new facility, which is a $15 million expansion to the operation as it exists right now, getting rid of the old portables finally and connecting it all. I've seen the artist rendering. It's absolutely magnificent. They've reached about $8.5 million in contributions so far, which is a good start on 15, but there's a long ways to go. Sarah and I attended the official groundbreaking last Tuesday, so it is now under construction officially, and it's going to be a wild year trying to get that done. When we saw what they hope to accomplish in a year, it's pretty aggressive. So this is a plea for help. The Stein family, and a lot of you know who they are because they're very charitable and well-known people around here. They've already been very involved financially and with their assistance in this building project. They have pledged $1 million. Here's how it goes. For every dollar that you put in up to that million, they will match it. How many times do you get to have a 200% impact on your money for something that we all care so much about? It doesn't happen often. So anytime, there's no time limit on it, but the sooner the better, because that goal needs to be reached in time that they know they're going to be able to complete this. So I'd like to see the next $2 million happen real fast. It's one of yours matched one for one by the Steins. So you can send a check to the office. Better yet, you can make an ongoing commitment, a monthly credit card or something like that. Remember, your donations are tax deductible. Adam, I would like to put a link to the Humane Society on our website, VanWeeFinancial.com.
No problem.
And anybody who wants to can show up out there, and they'll give you a whole tour of the facility. And I'm promising you, you'll be impressed. First off, the grounds are magnificent. There's old laurel oaks, that sort of thing. They're saving as many as they can to do this expansion, but it's really something to see. Now, a note to all our military types, past and present. You can adopt an animal for free if you're military. How about that on Memorial Day? So we adopted a little slogan. It says, let's build this puppy. All right. Anybody wants more information, call us, call the Humane Society, go to our website, whatever, and let's get some money out there and put this thing over $10 million right away, and then we'll sneak up on the 15 after that. But the next $2 million are a slam dunk when you get it matched one for one. How about that? Wayne.
Yes, I gotta say, in preface to what I wanted to talk about, is I'm a chairperson of my homeowners association committees, and we put these things up when they have these adoption fairs. When, you know, a lot of times the Humane Society and Animal Control and No More Homeless Pets, they all get together and they do something out at the fairgrounds and things of that nature. And I got to recommend to everybody, take advantage of these facilities. We've got the best in Florida, I believe.
Thank you.
So that being said, I want to move on to what I actually called about.
Okay.
My son had transferred to a different occupation and working for a different company. And they have the 401k, I believe. They have the IRA, Roth IRA. What's the difference between the 401k and the Roth IRA as far as investment strength moving throughout your life? Can you have a combination of both?
Yes, you may have a combination of both. Okay. There are income limits on the Roth. There are not on the 401k.
I see.
So the main difference in the two is tax deductibility.
Well, okay. Those income limits only apply if you do it on your own, right? If you have a company-sponsored...
True.
There shouldn't be an income limit.
That's a good point.
Well, so the company, the IRS establishes company as opposed to individual limits, then? Is that what you're
saying? It depends on the benefit package from the company that he's working for.
Okay.
So most of them offer a traditional 401k, less often now, but increasingly they offer a Roth version of the 401k. There are others that have things called simple IRAs or sponsored IRAs of some sort like that. So it's whatever he finds available that should guide the way he goes.
Right.
But the number one difference is if it has the word Roth in it, contributions are not tax deductible as they're made.
So are they deferred?
It's tax deferred and tax free forever. In other words, if you keep the Roth forever... And the theory is, and the law is right now, I'm not saying it won't ever change, but the law is that the later withdrawals will come out tax-free also.
Okay.
How old is he?
He basically was a truck driver, driving ATVs. Now he's working for a co-op, a huge co-op that hauls grain, they haul fertilizer, mm-hmm. that type of thing. He's
sure.
probably 36.
Okay, does he own a home?
Yes, out in the country.
Okay. One of the major reasons you would use a Roth would be to save up money for a first-time homeowner.
Oh.
And that doesn't apply to him.
Okay.
Does he make enough money that he's in a tax bracket of 25% or more?
You know, I'm not sure how that percentages break down, but he makes about $40,000.
And married? He may.
Married.
I think he may want to consider doing the Roth option.
Yeah, it sounds like the Roth will, in some ways, benefits you more than a traditional based on when you put the money in. So if you're young and you don't make a lot of money, you're in a low tax bracket, you can benefit from a Roth because you'll pay the taxes up front, but then you have 30 plus years in this case, more or less, to grow that money. So all that growth is tax-free money somewhere down the road. Whereas with the 401k, the traditional, you put the money in and you get the tax deduction now. And if you're only getting a 15% tax deduction, it's not worth as much as if you're in a high tax bracket.
Right.
So then when you take that money out, it grows tax-free or tax-deferred, but then when you take it out, you get taxed on it later. So do you want the tax deferment now, or do you want the tax-free money later? And in his case, I would probably lean towards the Roth at this point.
Did you say if he was married?
Yes, he's. In fact, his wife homeschools. They both have degrees And like I say, the 18-wheeler has advantages and disadvantages driving, but he decided to work. You know, the children are along now, and so he wanted to be working for... basically what he does is he hauls grain, ethanol. This is not a part of Florida, so it's a big ethanol operation up in the Midwest.
Okay.
And the Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa area. So that's the kind of thing he does today, and they got great benefit, 5 weeks vacation. And,
nice.
And,
wow.
Yeah, it's a good deal, and ethanol is a huge operation, believe me. Yeah, people, we don't see it down here. We just see the results of it in the gas.
Right.
Yeah,
10%.
It's a big operation, believe me, if you get an opportunity to travel that way.
Yep.
And I'm from the Midwest.
Yeah,
so
we are too.
I speak to that. But we've lived here for 12, 13 years, roughly.
Good.
And I've listened to you way back, believe me.
Oh, great.
Way back to the early days with your other friend.
Uh-huh.
Does a show similar to yours.
Yeah, not as good.
Yeah, I don't want to advertise.
Thanks,
you.
Wayne.
I respect both of you.
Yeah,
now, I haven't
thank
met
you.
Your son, Adam, but I appreciate his input on your broadcast now that you two can work together.
Thanks, Wayne.
Father, son, I think that's a great thing. And we've got, as we move forward, my wife and I are here. My wife's a professor, and we... with respect to investments down the road, we'll be looking at some investments where we'll we have great people to turn to, yep. such as you and your son and others
great.
As well.
Give us a call.
So that being said,
yep.
We're up on a break here.
We're up on a hard break. I got to go, but call us at the office, please. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Things are growing like weeds out there, folks. Get rid of those, but you want to cut the ones that aren't weeds.
Yeah, I know Troy's out there working hard this morning.
Yeah, well, it was your place yesterday, my place this week, and still going strong. 662-9794, ask for Troy. All right, we have a couple things that we want to get done yet today. And, well, first off, a reminder of the trivia question. What percentage of 401k participants have no stock funds in their accounts? And I'm telling you, folks, this is egregious, and I'll talk more about that in the topic that's coming up right now. Last week, we had a caller who asked us how to start learning about identifying and selecting mutual funds. It is a very, very long discussion because it's very complicated. So over the next few weeks, we're going to do occasional segments on the process. But today I want to introduce the concept of how to even begin to do that, which is you have to identify what kind of a mutual fund you are actually looking for, because that will determine the starting point for evaluating the various options. And with that said, we're going to cut away a little bit to a different topic, and then I'm going to come back and start talking about things like asset classes, asset allocation, and certified financial planners.
All right.
And fee only.
Yeah.
And funds.
No, there's a lot to talk about on this topic. There really is.
This is what we do, people. This is exactly what we do, starting from scratch. All right. The Central States Pension Fund, an old buddy of mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love those Teamsters when they need some pension money, right? We paid a lot into it in my life. I can't say I'm unhappy to be out of it, but man, there's some people who were members of it that did not get what they should have gotten. Now, I'd stick up for the Teamsters or anybody else when somebody makes you a promise and doesn't keep it, and that goes for the city of Jacksonville too.
Yep, which is why this came up last week. I was talking about the Jacksonville Pension Fund, and I mentioned, well, it could be worse. It could be the Central States Pension Fund, which is quickly running out of money. So I had a listener call me in the office on Monday. I'll call him Dave. It's not his real name, but you know, that's what we're going to go by. He's a recent retiree and he is currently receiving a benefit from the fund. And so obviously he's in his 60s and plans on living for quite a while longer. So he's not very happy about that news, as I wouldn't be either. He wanted to know what the potential outcomes of the situation were. And I was pretty brutally honest with him, it doesn't look real good at this point. That doesn't mean that it will go bad, but right now, as it stands, it's not good. The Central States Pension Fund currently pays out over $3 in benefits for every $1 it takes in. Every month, the plan pays retirement and survivor benefits to about 212,000 individuals, most of whom depend on this money to survive. This doesn't even mention the estimated 200,000 additional people who are currently accruing benefits under the plan. So, yeah, at the current rate, assuming an average annual return of 7%, the fund will be bankrupt in about 10 years. Bankrupt meaning no more assets left, nothing to pay, even though they probably want to.
Like I said, I'll stick up for anybody, Teamster or anyone else. You make a promise, you keep that promise. And the reason this one wasn't made, which he's about to go into,
yeah,
this one makes me hot under the collar.
If you're not ticked off by this, there's something wrong. There's a really good reason that the good folks who have worked so hard for these pensions are facing a loss of their retirement income, and I never would have guessed what it is. In fact, the problem is brought to you by none other than the friendly folks at the IRS. Guys, it really gets to me. Prior to the 1990s, defined benefit plans or pension plans were very popular, not just for big business, but for small family offices. They were a great way for small businesses that made a lot of money and didn't have a lot of employees to put away huge amounts of tax-deferred money. Well, this caught onto the radar of the IRS, and basically they wanted that tax, they wanted to get paid on that money that people were putting away, so they made it a rule that you cannot overfund a pension. There you go.
Just brilliant, isn't it?
Then, during the 1990s, the stock market took off, as we were talking about earlier, and as a result, many pensions found themselves overfunded. That's right, they had too much money in relation to their benefit payouts, according to the IRS. Well, any pension manager or money manager knows that anything that can go up can come back down. So having an overfunded pension is usually a temporary situation. But the government, of course, did not, well, they might have realized it, but they still wanted their tax revenue. So this left the pension fund with very few options. First, they could suspend the contributions to the pension, which cost the companies their tax deduction. So that's not really very attractive to their member companies. Second, they could continue to contribute, but those contributions would not be tax deductible. So they're giving the money and not getting the deduction, even worse option. But many pensions, including the Central States Pension Fund, had an even bigger problem, which leads me to the third option. Because of their collective bargaining agreement with the Teamsters, the companies that use the Central State pensions couldn't stop their contributions to the fund without renegotiating their entire collective bargaining agreement. This basically left them with one option, which was to increase the benefits paid out by the plan. What could possibly go wrong?
What could go wrong? It's a formula for failure, that's all.
Terrible. So, as we were talking about earlier, the NASDAQ closed over 5,000 in 2000, a few times. From there, the dot-com bubble burst, and the NASDAQ retreated to its 1996 levels. The broad market wasn't affected nearly as badly as the NASDAQ, but it also fell, and along with it fell the value of the assets held by the Central State Pension Fund. At this point, not only were the value of the plans and the investments plummeting, but they were now also strapped with higher plan payout benefits. So their cash flow going out is raised, and the amount of money coming in is lowered, and the amount of money they have is lowered. All of this leads us to this past week when the plan to cut the benefits for some pensioners up to 60% was rejected because it wouldn't do enough to save the fund. So at this point, it's kind of like watching the Titanic headed for that iceberg. You know what's going to happen, but there just isn't time to turn the ship. There are still some potential solutions to this problem. None of them are very good. The first is the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which is a government fund that insures pensions. However, that is also running out of money and also pays much less than what your current benefit is. I think the maximum is somewhere just north of $1,000 a month, and some of these people are receiving several thousand dollars a month. The second is that companies that are part of the plan are forced to contribute additional money to the plan. So apparently UPS signed up for the Central States Pension Plan in 2007, and they agreed to pick up the payments for if the plan's benefits were cut. This could potentially put UPS on the hook to the tune of $3.8 billion that they would owe to the fund. There are many other potential solutions to this problem, including a taxpayer-funded bailout, cut in benefits, an increase in funding from the member companies, or a combination of any of these. But it's unlikely that any one of these solutions will generate the $11 billion needed to keep the fund solvent. Thank you, IRS.
Yeah. So where are we going to go from there?
I don't know. It's really a mess right now. And I also want to say, Wayne, thanks for the call. We forgot to let you guess the trivia question. If you want to shoot me an email, info@vanweefinancial.com, and give me a guess. We'll honor it if you get it right.
I'm going to give it out anyway.
Oh, that's right. So do that quickly before the end of the show.
There you go. You got about 3 minutes. All right. Mutual funds for dummies or whatever. There are seven fundamental asset classes: cash, domestic stock, domestic bond, foreign stock, foreign bond, real estate, and hedges. Hedges are things like commodities. So the first thing you have to do, let's say you're going to buy a house. You go see Angela and Howard and you say, I want to buy a house. The first question they're going to say is, where? You got to find a neighborhood. Well, when you're selecting a mutual fund, you want to find the mutual fund neighborhood. Let's say your neighborhood in this case would be domestic stocks. Okay, so we go to the neighborhood of domestic stocks. That's the start. From there, you've got small, medium, and large. You've got a lot of diversity. You've got other things, dividend payers, hundreds of different ways to do it. But we got to talk about neighborhood first and how those are done. So the topic for next week, we're going to start talking about asset allocation, which is what determines the various neighborhoods you're going to put together to make your city. Now, I'm going to tell you something about us so that nobody thinks that what we're doing here is selling anything. Banway Financial is an independent, fee-only financial planning and asset management firm. We have no affiliations with any financial firms aside from our relationship with Charles Schwab Company, who we use as a custodian for our clients' accounts. Schwab does not compensate us in any manner, but they make our lives a lot easier as a firm because they're really, really nice to work with. As certified financial planners, we maintain a fiduciary relationship with our clients. On the radio show, we do not recommend individual equities, certain mutual funds, certain ETFs. We don't do that because the selection process is difficult. So next week, we're going to start talking a bit about that. And, of course, there'll be some other new topics in your phone calls and all that. Remember those who kept us free.
What's the answer to that trivia?
That trivia question is 52% of you people have 401ks with no stock funds in them. How are you going to get rich if you don't get in the equity markets, people? We'll talk more about that next week, too. We have to run. Happy Memorial Day. This is the Banway Financial Hour.